Welcome to the Fairy Tales of India, where we bring to you stories of kings and queens, of princes and fairies, and of crafty wizards and magical beasts. These are classic tales of adventure, magic, and drama from India, brought to you in a new avatar by Gatha Story. To learn more, visit MythsAndLegendsIndia.com. Prince Sundar had ample time there to admire the knowledge of the shepherds. After all, not only could they interpret what the lizard had said, but also their simplicity, their honesty and truthfulness. Had they been cunning and greedy, they might otherwise have caught and taken him over to the king for a reward. True to the interpretation of the second shepherd, Lakshman Kumar, a carriage stopped in front of the Ganesha temple, and there came out of it the king and the Pradhan, the minister. They were, of course, not aware that the prince was inside the temple. The driver of the carriage was an old, faithful servant, and they thought that it was safe to talk. Karavadana and his subordinate chose that solitary place at the dead of night to hold secret consultations. The mantri spoke first. And one could easily perceive from his words that he was in a fit of anger. Unknown to them, the Prince Sundar heard every word that they spoke. "Why should the prince be thus allowed to ride free through my streets? Of the innumerable servants we have, and the soldiers we pay so handsomely, they're not one to cut down that impertinent head," roared the minister. The Pradhan continued, "My king, my lord, excuse me first for the humble words that I'm going to speak before your honor. We have taken up a kingdom to which we have no right. If the prince had demanded the throne 2 years ago, we should have rightfully returned it to him. And because he never asked, we did not restore it to him. He never troubles us with demands, and he lives like a loyal subject of the crown in his own quarters. Such being the case, why should we kill him? Why should we murder the only son of our old and much respected King Shivachar? What I beg to suggest to your honor is that we should not more trouble ourselves about his poor head." The Pradhan soon realized that his words were not to the taste of his king Karavadana. He stopped at once, though he had much to say upon that subject. "Vile wretch, how dare you preach morals to your superiors? You shall see the result of this before the morning dawns," bawled out the minister. The Pradhan saw that all his excellent advice was like blowing a horn in a deaf man's ears. He feared for his life, and so at once begged 1,000 pardons. He promised to bring the head of the prince within a week. And as Karavadana wanted precisely that, he spared the Pradhan. They then talked on different subjects, including the army, collection of taxes, and so on. After a while, they walked back to the coach in order to return to the palace. The prince came out of hiding, feeling breathless. The information he heard was just too much for him to handle. He was now almost stifled to death. The short breaths that he inhaled and exhaled were themselves enough to kill him. Added to that, the horrible words uttered by the Pradhan that fell on his ears. He had not even demanded what was rightfully his, the kingdom. Sundar took advantage of the darkness and tiptoed towards the rear of the carriage. By then, Karavadana and the Pradhan had finished their conversation and they were stepping into the carriage. Sundar prayed to the Lord before doing something courageous. Shankara has saved me till now. He may so save me throughout. So thinking to himself, he climbed behind the carriage and as it rolled on, thought again within himself, I will follow them, come what may, and find out what more plans they devise against my life. The carriage drove on to the opposite end of the town. It passed the west gate and entered a big orchard that was situated outside the town. The undaunted prince followed. In the middle of the orchard was a fine tank. The banks of the tank were lit up, and it was as bright as daytime. In the midst of the tank, a small island with a gaudy mansion was seen. The mansion had pillars of gold, sofas of silver, and doors of diamonds. It was a magical place. A broad road with a number of sweet-smelling flowering trees connected the island with the bank. It was at that road that the carriage stopped. The prince had stepped down from the carriage as it was approaching the road. He hid himself under the shade of a tree and remained unobserved to all that came in and out of the mansion. He had every reason to believe that the magical mansion was the destination of Karavadana. Before leaving the west gate of the city, the minister turned king had sent the Pradhan home. While Karavadana was stepping down from the carriage, Prince Sundar looked at the garden surrounding the palatial mansion. What most astonished the prince was the absence of any male servants in that garden. At the entrance of the road, 20 young women of the most exquisite beauty welcomed and then conducted Karavadana through the arched walkway that led to the mansion. When it was reached, the minister sat down on a most richly furnished gold couch and ordered the females there to bring the queen. 10 females arranged themselves on each side of an ivory palanquin and started apparently to bring the queen in it. Prince Sundar thought to himself, these women themselves resemble the Apsaras, the angels from the heavens, Rambha, Urvashi and Tilottama. A woman who is the queen must possess beauty that is superior to these women. I am eager to see this greatest beauty imaginable in this world. Looks like they are bringing her to Karavadana. Thus thinking, the Prince Sundar anxiously awaited the return of the palanquin. In a few minutes, it came to the spot where Karavadana was seated on the couch. A woman of the most charming beauty jumped briskly out of the palanquin. The minister came running and gave his helping hand to her. What did the prince see? It was his own wife, The very girl that the king Karavadana had chosen to be his wife a few years before, that got down from the palanquin. Are my eyes deceiving me? Am I dreaming? Or is this for real? Let me look once more. So, once more, he wiped his eyes, and what the prince saw stunned him. It was his wife herself. Prince Sundar said to himself, "Oh, I most foolishly accused my grey-headed guardian, Ranveer Singh, for a wicked fool, because he would not allow me to be friends with my wife. I now can see what he must have known a long time ago. Looks like there is a secret passage from the palace to this place. Perhaps if I had spent more time with my wife, she would have told me about the secret passage. And I must thank Ranveer Singh. He did not let me eat any betel leaf that my wife gave me. What if it was poisoned? I would have died that very day. My poor old man, my Ranveer Singh it is, who has saved me from all these calamities." These thoughts and a thousand more were passing through Sundar's mind when he saw his wife sitting down on the same couch with the minister. She accused him of the delay in murdering her husband, of his letting all opportunities escape during the morning ride. The prince thought to himself, "Horrible! Did you, Karavadana, conspire to marry me to such a treacherous wife? Thank God and thank Ranveer Singh that I have not fallen into her snares," thought Sundar to himself. The king Karavadana offered 1,000 excuses and told her all the exchange that had taken place between himself and the Pradhan earlier that night. He also told the queen about the Pradhan's promise. After a while, both Karavadana and the queen retired to bed. A few moments later, a treacherous owl began to hoot. One of the maid servants, who could also interpret the language of the animals, birds, and the fish, told Karavadana that Prince Sundar was lurking behind a tree in that very garden. All the maids in the mansion were in reality warriors, like Amazons. They knew the price that had been set as a reward to kill Sundar, and all of them ran with torches to search the garden. There was a lot of commotion caused by the owl's hooting and subsequently because of the search for Prince Sundar. He knew something was wrong, and before the maids reached his hiding spot, he jumped over a high wall and ran for his life. While the maid warriors and Karavadana were leaving palatial mansion in search of the prince, Sundar found himself in the marketplace that was situated near the northern part of the town. The news that the prince was out that night spread like wildfire. Soon, everyone ran from pleasure park outside towards the marketplace. It was a matter of time before criminals, thieves, murderers, and other criminal persons were searching in the streets for his prince Sundar. Everyone was after the prince's life for the reward. Sundar thought that it was dangerous to pass through the city streets, and he wished to hide himself in a safe place. Lady Luck smiled on him, and he found an abandoned kitchen which lay in ruins. This was the same kitchen where food was cooked and served to the thousands of hungry souls during the days of his father. The abandoned building was used by urchins and homeless people as a sleeping place now. As soon as the prince entered the ruined kitchen building, he saw a group of homeless persons sleeping next to a wall. He laid himself down in the middle of them and covered himself with an old blanket. He hoped to remain unobserved this way. He could hear the commotion created by the searchers, those who were after his life. Meanwhile, in the charmed garden, Karavadana and the maid warriors searched for Sundar in vain, but they could not find him. Finally, Karavadana accused the interpreter for giving him false information, and he had her thrown into the dungeons.
Now, outside the north gate, at a distance of 3 miles walk, lived a robber called Bhima. He used to set about on a plundering expedition once in 7 years. But his robberies were unique and had one common feature from the houses and mansions he used to rob. Would he take only jewels of various kinds? Gomeda, Pushparuga, Vajra, Vaidurga and the likes. Gomeda is a cinnamon stone, Pushparuga is topaz, and Vajra is diamond. He rejected gold and silver as being too mean for his dignity. As he was a high-class robber, he used to take a coolie every time with him on his way to carry his booty. Of course, that coolie never returned from the cave. He was put to death after his services were over. This way, Bhima could protect both his identity and the location of the cave where the jewels were hidden. Unfortunately, the very night when Prince Sundar was being chased by every crook in Vijayanagar also happened to be the night of that cruel robber's plundering expedition. He came to the marketplace, and then he saw people in search of someone. He thought that the chaos that had resulted from the search for the prince provided a good opportunity to rob the jewelry shops. He wanted to look for a coolie, and he returned to pick out one among the beggars there. He passed over several of the homeless beggars before he came to a strong and stout man. Of course, in the darkness, Bhima could not recognize that the beggar was in fact Prince Sundar. Did you like today's story? If so, we would love to hear your feedback. Write to us at contact@gathastory.com with your comments or feedback. Better yet, please, please, please leave a review. We would really appreciate it.